Attention. Attention. The following program is an extremely important program.
Are there any movie buffs around? Are you a movie buff? Yeah, you know, I'll take a movie. I don't know what a buff is. That's a term that is always used in the New Yorker. And I guess they're a little embarrassed to say fans. The word fan bugs. The word fan really bothers guys who prefer to use the word buff. I don't quite know what a buff is. What is the difference between a movie buff and a movie fan? Is there a difference? Well, I guess the difference really is the difference between a man who goes to the movies or who goes to the cinema. You agree? But while we're on the subject of the cinemas and the buffs, I must say that I go to, you know, I've gone to movies ever since I was a, you know, I can't even remember the first movie I ever saw. I was going to movies all my life. Now, it's hard to say what qualifies you as an expert on a movie. Now, what qualifies you as an expert on movies? Very difficult. Maybe it's because you got to get a good publisher, and you have to say you're an expert. That's it. Say you're an expert, and by God, if you say it enough, you'll be one. And that's all there is to it. So, nevertheless, the film. You know, everybody's gone to movies all their lives, and one way or another. But I'm talking about, when I talk about film literature, I'm talking about a substrata of film literature, not literature about films. But have you run into the phenomena when you go down? Sometimes you'll be down at the bookstore and you'll be where paperback books are sold, and you'll all of a sudden come across a title that is the name of a film. Well, now the first thing you think of offhand is that must be the book that they made the film from. Quite often it's the reverse. That's a new thing, or most people think it's new, where they make a novel quote out of the film. There was never any novel like that, you see, before the film was made. In other words, the film was an original film script, and so after the film went out and became popular, somebody came out and says, well, let's have a let's write this novel called The Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid. And so then they just take the script of the film, you know, and they bat out this pseudo novel in about 10 minutes, and it sells for Billy Be Damned. Did you know that? That's a whole new substratum. Now, most people would think that's new, right? Okay. The reason that I wanted to do this tonight, get it said in there, Al, is somebody sent me a book. They were like I am. I'm a inveterate browser among old books. I cannot resist it. I cannot. I've tried. Some people can't resist browsing among old records. You know, records they see. This never stops me. I never stop. I'm not that interested. Once in a while, I'll stop. You know, but it's not the pull that exerts on me. There's two things that I cannot pass without feeling an urge to stop and go rummage. One is a place where they sell used books. Any kind. I just love to look at them, and I almost always buy them. And incidentally, now it's gotten so bad that I have two apartments, one for my books and the other one where I live. And but nevertheless, you know, and I that's the way it is. The other thing that I cannot pass, and under any circumstances, and I think I don't share this with too many, is a used car lot. I don't know what it is. I'm not going to buy one. But I just can't walk past it without feeling, oh, well, I'm just going to take a look around and see what he's got, you know. And the next thing you know, you're way in the back rows there, where the ones that are in the shadow where they don't have the light bulbs lit. And that's where you see some interesting cars, let me tell you. Back seats are bloodstained. You can see the bullet holes through the trunk. But nevertheless, this guy went through this old used bookstore scene. He sent this off to me. He sent this a long time ago. He came in. And he sent it out to me. He says, Shepard, he said, take a look at this if you're interested in film literature. And here I've got it now. This is a novel made from a film that was a big hit film, apparently, back in the 1920s. Obviously a silent film. And here is the novel. And it was made back in the days when many, many films were made about flying. Flying was a big deal in those days. And it's called Jimmy Allen in the Sky Parade. And in fact, there's even stills from the film in here. Great looking stills. And I will read the opening lines of this thing, and I will read this. It's Jimmy Allen in the Sky Parade, novelized by Wallace West. Now, there's an obvious pen name if I ever heard one, Wallace West. Illustrated from the photoplay, produced by Adolph Zukor, a Paramount picture. Read the book, see the picture. Curiously enough, it was published in The Village on 8th Street. And here it goes. You all set now? You ready for the exciting? Give me a little of mood music. Let's set it up there. Come on. Let's set it up there. We are now entering the halls of a silent movie house. This, by the way, was not that early. They did not have pianos playing, but we're just setting the mood, you know, okay? That's called artistic license, right? And you get that down at the City Hall, it costs you $4. Here goes. An artistic license. It's a 3-year license. I have to explain my jokes to you guys. Ah, yes. Remember, this is in stark black and white. Chapter 1. Step right up this way. Step this way, ladies and gentlemen. Step right this way, ladies and gentlemen. Step up, shouted the lean and dapper chap in the check suit as he smiled dazzlingly upon the crowd of country folk who jammed the midway of the county fairgrounds. Now, siree, this is no swindle, no falsification of facts. Right here you will see a scientific theory, tested and proved. Step right this way. Step up, step up. A few people began to desert the other attractions and gather around the speaker. Prominent among them was a small, tousle-haired boy eating a candied apple on a stick. That's right, my friends, that's right. Step right up and improve your knowledge of science. Step right up, step this way, cried the barker. We shall attempt to prove, right now, this afternoon, right here before your very eyes, a scientific principle. We will prove that the human hand, is quicker than the human eye. We will prove that the human hand, I repeat, is quicker than the eye. Then, as the onlookers laughed and groaned at this stale inducement, he calmly took 3 walnut shells and a bean from his pockets and deposited them on a small table in front of them. And then, perceiving that the inquisitive child was still present, he frowned and added, "Run along, little boy, run along. It's no place for you, kid." As the youngster made no move to go, the sleight-of-hand artist was forced to resume his spiel as he manipulated the bean and the shells. "Step this way, step this way, right this way, ladies and gentlemen. See if you can find the little bean. Look for the little bean. No trick, no flim-flammery. Just find the little bean under one of those shells and earn a quarter, 2 bits, 25 cents, 1/4 of a dollar. See if you can find the bean under the shells."
"I know where it is,"
volunteered the boy, pointing.
"Now listen, sonny, it just happens that minors are not allowed to gamble. Yeah, so run along, kid, and by the way, are you by any chance over 21?
"No,"
was the discouraged answer.
"And you haven't got a quarter to bet anyway, have you, kid?"
As the boy shook his head forlornly, a member of the laughing crowd stepped forward, quarter in hand.
Where's the bean, kid?" he asked.
"It's under that one."
The boy indicated the left-hand shell. Sourly, the barker lifted the pod. Under it nestled the bean. Other members of the crowd began capitalizing on the boy's quick eyes, and the result was, 15 minutes later, the spieler's pockets were empty, while his tormentor had a handful of dimes donated by the winning yokels.
"Now, just a minute, kid," the discomfited gambler was saying as he gamely searched his clothes for my money. "Just a minute, I'm not licked yet. The hand is quicker than the eye, no matter what this young squirt says, and I'm going to prove it to you. The hand is quick." His speech was drowned out then by the sound of an airplane, an approaching airplane, roaring overhead. It roared overhead. Sounds like it's having motor trouble.
All right, thank you very much. You gave me...
"Come on, give me that airplane. That's important, it is."
His speech was drowned. "No, get the one that says, flight over the trenches. You just got me the sound of an engine." "Come on, Al, for God's sakes. That's what happens when you're Adolf Zucker. You're always having trouble with your production assistants. All right, bring it up. Just bring that sound up. This is important. Okay, the guy says, I'm not licked yet. The hand is quicker than the eye, no matter what that young squirt says. And just at that point, his speech was drowned out by the sound of an approaching airplane. The crowd looked up and then ducked. That's a ship, part of an air circus. Roared overhead, within 10 feet of their head. The gambler jumped backward, tripped, knocked over his table and fell on it, completely demolishing his layout. You crazy idiot! He yelled as he regained his feet. I'll have the law on you for that! The airplane roared away. That was my dad. The boy volunteered proudly. Over there, over there. That man walking with the man close on the ground, well, he's my friend, and the other one's my godfather. That was my daddy. Well, that's all too much for me, kid, was the cold answer. Well, let's go right over and have a talk with your parent. He stormed toward the racetrack of the fairgrounds, which had been converted into a temporary flying field. And the plane had landed. And he walked up to the airplane and said, are you the parent of this brat? He demanded of manly Scott Allen as the latter climbed out of his plane and pulled off his goggles.
Has he been annoying you? Scott's voice was apparently severe.
Oh, has he? This kid, I'll tell you, he's got eyes like a cat. Cleaned me out at my own shell game. And then you come along and make me fall all over my equipment and smash it. Mister, I want $5 damages. I want it now.
Oh, $5 is one of my fondest dreams also, Scott answered with a laugh.
No money, volunteered Speed Robertson, another pilot in the air circus as he sauntered up, grinning impishly. No money, oh boy, but we could take you as a partner, buddy. You mean a job? Cried the gambler in delight. Why, your gang could do with a barker, come to think of it. And then you'd need a mechanic, too, which there is no better than your newfound friend. You guys can call me Flash Lewis, an ace mechanic. I was a mechanic on airplanes when they were flying over the Western Front. And I learned the gambling game at the knees of a master. And I'm one of the greatest spielers in the world. You sure could use me.
Are you really a mechanic? Scotty's blue eyes opened in amazement.
Oh, am I a mechanic? Flash turned to Speed. He asked me if I am a mechanic. Why, gentlemen, if it weren't for my one great passion, I would at this very moment be employed probably as chief mechanic at the Lockwood Aircraft Plant.
Was it drink? Winked Scotty at Speed.
Alas, no, I never could afford a drink, Flash bowed his head. The twinkling nutshells, I'll tell you, I can't resist them. I can't resist them nutshells, and I never know when I never know when to stop when I'm losing. The foreman at the plant seemed to resent it, and maybe you'll give me another chance. It won't cost you a thing.
Flash, consider yourself hired, grunted Speed. We didn't have any money to pay our last mechanic, so he quit today. There, my good fellow, he presented Flash with the dollar bill. There is an advance on your salary, probably the last you'll ever get. Hey, wait a minute, cried Scotty. What are we going to eat with? You just spent our last buck. Well, our new barking mechanic is going to take us to dinner, was the reply.
The four of them were seated at a hot dog stand when Casey Cameron, the third member of the War Aces Flying Circus, dashed up, towing a pretty girl by the wrist.
Scotty, Speed, cried the beautiful girl. I've been looking everywhere for you.
Ha-ha, meet the new meal ticket, Scotty replied. Mr. Aloysius Lewis, Flash to us, our new barking mechanic.
At that point, a plane once again roared overhead as one of their friends... That's it. One of their friends roared over the diner in salute.
There goes Ace Murphy! Ace, we'll get you yet! Cried Scott.
Thank you. That's enough. Boy, you're having trouble getting that airplane, keeps.
Well, all right. Do you want it? Now, that is a novel. That's the opening. And it was not made for kids. That's what I will point out to you. Incidentally, if you want to read some childish novels of that type that are still done today, there's one out called Banachek. It's really unbelievable. It's written with no more style than this. But this was the opening scenes out of a movie called The Sky Parade. Have you ever heard it? Ever seen it? Well, apparently it was made And let's see if he lists the casts. Let me see here. If he lists the cast. No, the cast is not listed, although they're all here in pictures. Maybe you recognize them because there's some pictures from the film. And here's the next scene. Bring me a little of that. Bring me the airplane. We got to set the mood with the airplane scene. Okay. See, remember, they have a flying circus. And if you're interested in the aircraft, it looks like the airplanes that they have here are Travelairs, which was a biplane of the 20s. Travelairs. They also have... Wait a minute. One of the planes shown in the picture here is a Curtiss Robin. So they have a lot of great airplanes in this movie. I'd love to see that movie. By the way, can I... Hold it. Thank you, Al. That's enough. That's another hobby that secret little hobbies that people have that other people don't even know about or even suspect. Whenever I see a movie listed, I happen to be a pilot, and I'm really into airplanes. And whenever I see listed in old television, you know, like late movies, on Channel 2 or whatever, you know, really late movies, they always show them then. When they're having an old aviation picture of this type, of course, this was earlier than the ones that you usually see, I always watch them for one reason. I wonder how many of you realize that many of the airplanes that you see in those films are genuine historical aircraft, and many of them do not even exist. Not a single example of that aircraft exists today. Even in museums, there are many aircraft that just don't exist any longer. And the only place that the historians, film historians, can see them, not film historians, but I'm talking about aviation historians and historians in general, can see these aircraft is in films. I'll give you an example of that. There is no known existing model of the aircraft that most of you are probably familiar with because of the Snoopy's whole big thing of the Red Baron. Well, the Red Baron flew an aircraft in the last stages of his career. That's what he's generally associated with, although he made most of his famous victories in a different type of airplane, an Albatross, as a matter of fact. He did not fly a Fokker DR-1, which is the Fokker triplane, till the last phases of his career. That aircraft, which you generally see him pictured with, the red DR-1 triplane, there is not a single known example of that aircraft in the world. There are several replicas in which somebody has actually built one, but it's not genuine. It's they're replicas, but there's not a known example of the aircraft itself in existence. Do you know that there's several pieces of that aircraft that the Baron was shot down in, though, do exist? Did you know that in a museum there is the actual cockpit seat that the Baron was in at the time he was killed, along with his flying suit that he was wearing when he was killed, are in a museum, along with the aircraft engine that was in that plane at the time it went down. That airplane was a copy, by the way, if you're curious about that airplane. I hope I'm not boring you with this, but the Fokker triplane was a copy of a very successful English airplane, the Sopwith triplane, which was a variation of the Sopwith Camel, but it was a triplane and an extremely effective fighter, and the Fokker triplane was a copy of that. The Fokker tripe, or rather, the Sopwith triplane hit the Western Front like a unbelievable bomb. It was indestructible, and the Germans quickly attempted to copy that plane, and their copy was never as good as the original. The Sopwith triplane was actually a much better airplane than the Fokker triplane, which was treacherous, dangerous airplane, and not as effective as the Sopwith. However, there is no known example of that airplane existing. However, there are two films that are known of the triplane actually in action. There is one film that was made by Hollywood, interestingly enough, back in the 20s, one of these Hollywood films, just a, you know, a obviously a hack film. But they had gotten several Fokker triplanes. At that time, there were some existing back in the 20s, and they had brought them over, and they got them. They were running, and they were usable. And they appear in two combat sequences of a of one of these films. Whatever happened to those airplanes has not since been known. They have disappeared completely, and they no longer exist. But the film of the plane itself is often used in all kinds of very serious ways, taken out of this hack film. The film itself is nothing. But that footage is extremely important because it's the only known footage, close-up footage, of a Fokker triplane actually flying and doing aerobatics, a real Fokker triplane. That's interesting. Now, a lot of that stuff, I don't know whether Pauline Kael knows about this. I'm sure she doesn't. But the value of many films transcends the artistic value of the film because of what was on that film, the actual... Now, another example of that. Do you know that a film, which is generally... who thinks of a Class B film was shot on the flight deck, actually while it was in flight, of the Hindenburg, flying the great dirigible that exploded and burned in New Jersey back in the mid-1930s, which was a great international incident. One of the best records of the Hindenburg, actually in flight. The flight deck, the salon, everything else, shots out of it, looking down at the ocean, the ship in flight on a transatlantic flight, was in a Charlie Chan movie. The movie itself is terrible, but it's called Charlie Chan at the Olympics. If you ever get a chance to see that, Charlie Chan at the Olympics, he is on the dirigible Hindenburg in the Olympics. Fantastic scenes. Now, that's what I'm trying to say, that when you look at films for different reasons, you see all kinds of great stuff that have nothing to do with the film. So I always watch old films for the aircraft that are in them, because there's a lot of those airplanes, I simply say, they do not exist. And there they are, taxiing around a field, the guys getting in, flying it off, and they even, in some cases, you can hear the sound of the engines and so on. Now, I'll give you an example of that. During the 1930s, historically, America had a lot of very interesting pursuit ships that are no longer, none of them exist. All kinds of strange observation airplanes, low-winged Lockheeds, very curious aircraft that, by our standards, very interesting aircraft. None of them exist at all, not even in the museums. And yet you'll see them being piloted by... Chester Morris. he's flying a... Now, one of the examples of that type of thing is... Now, most people know the sequences out of King Kong when the airplanes are flying around the Empire State Building. And when that was filmed, the Empire State Building was a brand new, very exotic building. It had all the impact on people as, say, the World Trade Center now. It was a big new building, and here these planes were flying around. Now, most people never look at the planes. They always look at King Kong or Fay Wray. Now, what kind of planes were they? Very interesting thing. To aviation fans, it's very interesting what they were. They were flying surplus U.S. Armed Forces equipment in that. You're curious? And they were not World War I airplanes. I'll have to give you that bit, too. Most people think all biplanes were World War I planes. No way. In fact, some of the great airplanes made today are biplanes. Did you know that? Among them, the Pitts, a great aerobatic plane. But you know that there was a plane made during World War I, if you're curious about, a quadruplane that had four wings. You know the triplane, which is the Fokker tripe. Now, the other day, I was watching a movie, just happened to flick it on, And the people got into an airplane that is legendary today, a legendary aircraft. And it was just in a casual walk past scene. They went to this airport, and they were flying. It was the whole point was that this detective was going out to the coast, and he was going to get the bad guy. The bad guy had gone out to the coast, and he decided he had to fly out there. Well, so he goes out to the airport, and the whole scene of them getting on the airplane. Now, what did he get on? Very interesting. He got on an airplane that was one of the very few major commercial biplanes. In other words, did you know that the airlines in this country at one time, and I'm not talking about way in the ancient days, I'm talking about, you know, comparatively modern, that they had a biplane that was used, it was built as a commercial airplane. And none of these exist, to as far as anybody knows, anywhere, because it would be very difficult to maintain this thing, this giant airplane. And it was a huge airplane, and I'll give you a clue. It was made by Curtiss. What was the name of the plane? In those days, they named airplanes. They were not called by numbers as they are today. You know, 747, DC-3, DC-8, DC-10. This was a Curtiss what? Okay. It was a Curtiss Condor. And now it was very elegant. Now, this was fascinating because the scene then shifted inside the cabin. And the guy got in the cabin. Now, we tend to think of air travel today must be much more elegant today than that. Forget it, friends. Inside the Curtiss Condor, it was a sleeper. And they had staterooms inside of it. The guy had his own stateroom. It was a little walnut-like teakwood stateroom that he went into. He had a bunk. And he went out, and he met this girl that he was with. She was in another stateroom, and they had dinner in the dining room on the airplane. And they sat down, and here you could see the clouds going by outside. You could see the ground below, and they were being served an elegant wine, and it had flowers on the table. And the waiter, who was the steward, was wearing a white coat and came and offered them this elegant champagne, and they were flying west on the airplane, and that was in a Curtiss Condor. now, where would you see this but in a movie? No way. I also like to look for old cars, great-looking cars that you see occasionally in movies. But the aircraft, is even more interesting because most of the old cars you can see in various museums. You know, people have restored these various cars. But not so with the airplanes. They're really rare. In fact, one of the craziest scenes I've seen in a long time was a scene out of an old movie that involved an autogyro chase. Now, an autogyro was an interesting aircraft. It was halfway between an airplane and a helicopter. And this was an autogyro that was roaring right down Broadway, flying between the buildings. And this autogyro with this great big revolving prop on top, it looks to the untutored eye, it looks like a helicopter, but it is not. And it's got this great big prop on top, just like a helicopter. And he's roaring down Broadway, and he's pursuing the bad guy who is escaping in a cab. Now, how about that for a scene? And he's roaring right down Broadway in an autogyro, a very rare airplane, an extremely dangerous aircraft, by the way, and one that cost many a guy to lose his skin. Another great airplane you see often is the Tin Goose. What is the Tin Goose? You mean you don't know what plane is called the Tin Goose? Well, that's the Ford Trimotor. That's called the Tin Goose. And that airplane is deafening inside because it's got flat aluminum siding. When you get in the airplane, the vibration of it. And it's got wicker seats for the passengers, for lightness, very elegant wicker seats. And a friend of mine has gotten two wicker seats from Fokker Trimotors, and he's made them into a dining room set, you know?